Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And as I've been starting to say, it is now or never. I've been saying this for a while. It's now or never. And because it's important to kind of impress upon you, the debt, the national debt you're looking at, folks, is fraudulent. And that's not hyperbole. It's not hyperbolic speech. It's not, you know, hyperbole, however you want to pronounce it. GR is not trying to be a Karen or a drama queen. That is a constitutional fact. The framers, if they were here, they would clearly say, you have no authority to be spending all this money on crap you have no delegated authority to spend on. And they've been doing it for well over a century. Actually, they've been doing it over two centuries, practically, where they've been reaching into the public till, trying to do what they think is good, using or actually redefining the General Welfare and Defense Clause, redefining the Necessary and Proper Clause, redefining the Supremacy Clause, redefining the Commerce Clause, and many other clauses as they go along. And so they finally got to a point, folks. The federal government finally got to a point that they were so far outside the framework of the Constitution, they felt obligated to help everybody understand how they've made up the rules for today. It's called the Annotated Constitution. And that's the Constitution they function and operate by. It's not the Constitution. No patriot even knows about that, or very few. Very few. Only those people who have either read my latest article or those people who have at least been informed about this. For some reason, you know, when you really think about it, and this kind of goes to what I was saying earlier about a book, a friend that wrote a book, there is so much happening. There is so much you need to know that, you know, we think, you know, maybe we just don't have time to tell you that there were three presidents that vetoed congressional attempts to actually do things that were regarding the Department of Transportation, like improving highways and waterways and byways, just improving them, not building them, but improving them. There is just so much that you can't just sit there in a 15-minute presentation, an hour presentation, or even during an all-day presentation to get all of the information you need to understand how far outside the box they are and how they got there. And as a matter of fact, the question I ask is, why is it that we need to? What is most important is to understand that they are limited and defined by those enumerated powers, how they were defined, those stipulations that were provided during the ratification debates. They're held to that. The fact is, no judge in America has ever once, and I emphasize this, has ever once called forth the ratification debates as to how that Constitution was stipulated. Why? Because it would have tied their hands. People would have said, well, what does the ratification debate say? And that's why you have to do this. Oh, well, you in a committee at your county. When you start looking at what we're talking about, what has to happen is that the county actually has to create this Constitutional Compliance Committee. And it's not hard about providing how each of these definitions, you know, how the federal government went down and created the Annotated Constitution, the ratification debate stipulations of the Constitution and tying and linking all of that together can easily be done just the way they did it. But what we're doing is we're actually providing hard terms and definitions that are immutable. I mean, it's moot. You can't argue whether that's the definition or not, because that's what was provided. What actually happens is it takes away the justices, you know, this great, powerful... I'm trying to remember the gentleman. It's been so long. Kreskin or Johnny Carson used to play. And as a matter of fact, I heard it a while back where somebody referenced it. Carnan or something, where he'd actually hold an envelope up to his head and he'd give the answer and then he'd read the question. And it was always a riot. But the fact is that there's nobody that has the authority, no judge, no one has the authority to redefine how the Constitution was defined during the ratification debates. And here's the question. What happens if there is no term, stipulation, or definition regarding something in the Constitution? People go, well, what does that mean? Does the court have the ability to interpret? No. Let me say that again. No. They do not have the authority to interpret. If there is a question, Congress can kind of come up with a term or a definition of what that means, but bottom line, they cannot change they cannot use that term or definition to aggrandize a role, responsibility, power, or anything else. If so, the states have to step in. And bottom line, it is in Congress' interest to go to the states to say, we define this to do this. And let the states basically come back and we agree and allow the states to actually provide them. Because whose contract is it? It's not the federal government's contract. They were created by, they are the creature of the contract. So, I don't know if my constantly saying the debt is fraud is necessarily a good thing. Because I find myself actually going down these little rat holes that next thing you know, I've got to kind of rush to get into the content we're going to cover. But the fact of the matter is, you need to start understanding. And I think that the one thing that resonates with Americans is the bottom line, you know, what impacts your wallet. And just remember that all the taxes that you're being hit with, almost all of them, from your state government and your federal government are all being derived from the federal government spending money it doesn't have. So it basically inflicts these policies, like the environment, labor, all of these different policies that are affecting your wallet and bottom line. So let me just give you one good example and I'll get out of the rat hole. When the federal government decided to get into labor and started to regulate these standards and so forth, and, you know, what they were doing was they were basically bolstering up the union, and that was the intent to actually, you know, help grow collectivism in the employment sphere. And so, because that was the drive, and if you understand collectivism, that's communism. And so, you know, it doesn't matter how well you work or how much better you are than everybody else in the workplace, everybody gets the same pay. And actually, if you've heard the stories, there's people on the production line or what, hey, what are you trying to prove? You trying to make us look bad? You better slow it down, buddy. I mean, people actually threaten people to, you know, to stifle their production, to do what everybody else is doing. And I'm telling you, folks, that is a parasitical function of collective labor and how they destroy our economy. Because people are so caught up with, you know, making what everybody else makes. Anyway, but I digress. The whole point that I was bringing up regarding labor, it was the minimum wage. The federal government started actually getting in and regulating, and they mandated minimum wage. And that now has effect on everybody. Is there any state in the union that is not covered on that blanket of minimum wage? And these progressive states are running it to the death. And what I mean by that is when you look at California, look how they're destroying business by raising minimum wage to $20. Washington State the same way. And, oh, folks, this is your problem. You have to get engaged. Until we start holding our public servants accountable, the blood is on your hands, not theirs. We've had the ability to use the First Amendment petition since the beginning. And instead, we've done, you know, remember that rally on in Selma with, you know, Bush, or not Bush, but with Glenn Beck and the Twelfthers. Remember, you know, the rally on the 12th. You know, all of these different rallies, whether Glenn Beck has done them or whomever's done them. The January 6th rally. You keep getting set up. The one thing you have a right to do is petition government and hold them accountable. And they love it when you go down to Selma. They love it when you go to D.C. and you just want to say, wah, 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 like Karen's in the street. And I'm here to tell you, folks, unless you articulate how they're violating the Constitution. And you know what? If you don't know how to do it, this is why we're building the repository on reclaimingtherepublic.org. Go to the petitions page. I think we have up to 17 petitions there now. And hopefully within the next couple months, we'll have a big surge and uptick, and we'll have maybe 20 or more. 20 petitions. We're going to be uploading education, labor, and a few others. Anyway. So when we look at how, you know, what the government does and how it spends and how it injects, it inflates our currency, and it just it adds more and more to create this insurmountable interest that we're having to pay on fraudulent debt. This is all make-believe. This is all manipulation because they're doing things they don't have the authority to do. It's fraud, pure and simple, fraud. So before I dive back into the political exorcisms, and I promise by Friday I will dive back into it. There was just a few things that I didn't get to really cover in the Feedback Friday segment and so forth regarding the news. And so I wanted to re-emphasize. So let me start back off, because I started mentioning this, that a friend of mine, Dr. Edward A. Carlevelle, wrote a book, and it was called Guide to Managing Information Overload in a Social Media World, because almost everything has become a part and a facet of social media. Social media has become this medium that is controlling everything. You know, in the old days, the medium was, and these are platforms, right? Social media is a platform. Technically, the New York Times is a platform. They have no right whatsoever to stifle free speech. They are literally just a platform. If it was AI and the New York Times was a computer that provided you reports and information, then it would be, you know, whatever it is. It's promulgating its message to you. That's exactly what platforms are. And so every platform tries to control their speech. In America, that right there, it's okay to do that, but that right there is not freedom of the press. Freedom of the press is for you to speak and say what you want, what you saw. And when you try to post it on social media, regardless of the platform, if they basically take it down and say this violates our community standards, then guess what? They have just denied you in America your right to be an agent of the press, to share with the public your information. This is why every state in the union should actually be making laws that there can be no community standards that stifle the press and the people's expressions. And as a matter of fact, if there is going to be content that is going to be adult in nature, then those things need to be pushed into a sphere where the inappropriate content cannot be viewed and available two children. This is why I totally believe that when they came up with the .com, .org, .us, .info, .net, all of these different extensions for internet universal URLs, readable language, the URL itself, that .com, they could have easily made a .xxx, where all the adult content not suitable for children. Folks, you want to actually sever and remove all pornography and all things that have no place in, you know, in front of children. We can easily change the internet to do that, so that any site, basically, it just gets, it gets buried for providing content that is inappropriate. And that way, at a hardware level and even at a software level, you can apply these censorships, or I should say these filters that don't allow computers that are accessible to children to be able to access that network, that domain type. So anyway, let me move on, because there's nothing wrong with protecting our children. Nothing wrong with that. But it's you that actually have to do that. You parents, we the people. It's not for government to determine what's appropriate and what's inappropriate. You, we the people, in your county committees need to say, we want this type of information available, and then drive that up to the state. This is why I'm saying every state can actually make this so that no platform can stifle speech. And if it's that type of speech, if you're going to have appropriate speech, then you will be held accountable. As a matter of fact, a person that publishes anything that is inappropriate can actually be held accountable, because that's the law. It's either liable or indecent. Yeah, we actually have these laws of indecent exposure, what have you. You can't expose yourself. You can't say certain things in front of children. Why don't we enforce those laws? Every state has those types of laws, and we don't even enforce them. Anyway, as I was saying regarding Taiwan, and I kind of glossed over this, but actually it's kind of interesting that when you look at what China is doing because of the new president and they're having this big exercise, I think this is huge. I think it is a great opportunity. And the problem is, everybody wants us to engage in warfare without actually, you know, killing Americans, sending Americans to die without actually having a real tangible solution and reason. Well, we don't like that. Well, actually, if Taiwan wants to be a free people, or if they want to be a puppet, then that's a different, and the United States should not be involved in nations that want to be or play with America as a puppet. Oh, well, you come over here and die for us, but we're still going to be, you know, a crappy nation and not care about the liberty of our people. If the people want liberty, let them have an election in Taiwan, and they can actually decide whether they want a petition to allow them, you know, to get the United States to allow them into the union, or they can say, you know what, we're going to take our chances with China and their colonization of the world. And that right there is something that kills me. We see so many kids in America today that talk about how evil America was in its colonization. And no one can say that Hawaii is worse off. No one can say that Alaska is worse off. As a matter of fact, people love to travel there. And people are dying to get to any state in the United States. Why? But when we look at colonization, it's alive and well. It's alive and well with Russia and alive and well with China. So they want to say that we were colonizers. Actually, we have been liberators. The problem is that we've gotten involved in foreign entanglements where we went and died, and then nothing really happened where we preserved liberty, which is what we should have done. we should never fight another war unless those people are dying, or not dying, I don't want to say it that way, but they realize the importance of living in a land of not only being free and having liberty, but a land of laws, fixed laws that protect our inalienable rights, where we can have the choices that we want to do those things that, as long as they are compatible with the liberty of others and we can live in harmony, then that is, you know, the criteria for them to say we want to become a part of the United States. Now, no nation that wants to compel and migrate into other people's nations and basically destroy them, like we see on our southern border, like we see in Europe, they should not even be welcomed. They should be repelled. What's happening, and the Constitution actually covers this. Isn't it amazing that they have everything in the Constitution to deal with all of these problems? That must be a huge coincidence. But it's not, and we know it's not. Now, one of the things I didn't get a chance to say on Friday is this whole student loan crap that Biden has been playing. I have to emphasize this again, folks, that this is an impeachable offense. What Congress has done has actually violated the Constitution in not allowing student debt to go into bankruptcy. The Constitution demands a uniform law. If you want people to be able to take out loans and say you can't, you either pay that loan off or we'll come and seize everything. In other words, remove bankruptcy out of the process in America, then okay, because that's what they did with these student loans. You'll die with that loan and the government will come and take your property because that loan cannot be dissolved through bankruptcy. But all other loans, your loan for your house, your loan for your business, all of those loans can easily go into bankruptcy. And the punishment and humility that a person goes through in bankruptcy is a process. Is the process so humbling that it keeps people from being repeat offenders? I don't think so. I think that we could improve the punishment for those people who overextended themselves very quickly and easily, and they just go through the cycle of repairing their financial backing or their financial name. And sometimes people just actually change their legal name so that they can get loans and do it again and do it again and do it again. And folks, so I think that we do need to increase the standard and the punishment for those people that do it. But the whole point of bankruptcy is because people do have, they, you know, it's no fault of their own, you know, because of the downturn of the economy, they get sucked into this bad situation. The Constitution demands that there be a uniform law on bankruptcy. You can't have different forms of laws where these loans are covered under bankruptcy and these loans are not. Uniform demands that they all have the same access, opportunity, and privilege of being able to go into bankruptcy. All of these kids should have the scar. And as a matter of fact, if you do this, what will end up happening is these schools will lose their money and these financings behind all of this. And as a matter of fact, the federal government shouldn't even be involved in the funding. What we're hearing from conservatives is, oh, we need to start defunding. No, you don't defund. You stop all funding for unconstitutional things. And education is one of those. Remember, we were just talking about the debt. And so it all comes back around, doesn't it? Anyway, so does the promo or the break time. So it's come back around, and we will have to take a break. So we will be right back after this promo. Again, this is a promo, not an advertisement. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Yeah. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so what I was going to actually cover on Friday, because I kind of mentioned this before, and it's kind of an episode or a little segment called What Might Have Been, right? And I kind of talked about having this possibility of a unified campaign. But before I get into that, what I want to do is kind of set the stage with this term or this idea of false prophets. And what are they today? Are they strictly, you know, people that, you know, say if you follow me, then you can be saved? Well, when you think about it, have we not tied religion to our politics? In other words, are people not ideologically wired politically? Because when you look at a communist and a godless communist, and as a matter of fact, I usually read this, it's called The Commitment. It's a letter that Billy Graham reads, and I've read this in the past. I haven't read it probably for a little while, and there's probably merit in reading it, but it's a kind of like a Dear Jane letter from a guy that goes to Mexico on an internship or, you know, some learning program as a student of, you know, some university in North Carolina, goes to Mexico to, you know, do this program and converts to communism. And he basically sends back this Dear Jane letter saying, I'm not coming back. I'm going to die for this cause. And so when you look at people that get sucked into those types of theocracies, because believe it or not, communism is a theocracy. They don't want you to have any religion other than godlessness, and they're offended, and they think that what you're teaching is dogma. Even though we see politicians like Hillary Clinton going into a church and actually speaking to people in church, she has no reverence for the Creator and for Christ. None whatsoever. And I say that because in her book, It Takes a Village, she clearly talks about religious dogma that they don't. She wants to create and wanted to create in this book the need for a Department of Social Services that would protect children from their parents' religious dogma. If you've never read that book, don't buy it. And and I'm just to give you some insight. How is it that Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, and all of these progressives sell, you know, all of a sudden they jump up onto the New York Times bestseller list. Boom. Instantly they publish it and it's up there. Because every library in the United States buys it, because that's what they do to support the progressive agenda. You can't tell me. And everybody knows, because they're seeing, you know, all of these perverted homosexual, more, you know, the perversion of our children books in the education system as well as in the libraries. Why is it that they're all buying this crap, this smut? Because that's how they take your money and they spend it on things like that, because it's a transfer of wealth to reward those people producing that filth like Hillary Clinton. And so in the book, it takes a village. This concept of keeping children from receiving the religious dogma from their parents is tantamount to a theocracy. In other words, a godless, secular, communist government. And so what I'm trying to kind of convey is that whether we like it or not, if you look at somebody that doesn't go to church, that is godless, and they're supporting this godless theocracy, I'm telling you, that is a person that is their religion. And so when we look at what the Bible talks about in the last days, is there will be many false prophets. There'll be rumors of wars, all of those things. And so there are false prophets, and they have nothing to do with religion. And I believe that people that basically say, vote for me, I will save you, where people really believe that they will be given some form of salvation, because, folks, you know, I know that people get kind of upset, and I know that, you know, people have way too much emotion in politics because they have tied services and ideologies in politics in America have been completely misplaced, because we have a limited defined government. Government has no business being able to save us. And as a matter of fact, if you've read my first book, I talk about how Obama and Biden, they went around basically talking and peddling salvation, but salvation doesn't come from one, it comes from the many. In other words, we the people have this collective salvation that will come from government, not from an entity like Christ. How evil is that? So when we look, and if you actually look at Obama's campaigns, he was promising like a false prophet. And my point is that we could probably start looking at many people today that are making promises regarding politics and how government can save you. And you know what? There's nothing within that Constitution that gives them any power to do any of those things that they're talking about, whether it be health care, Social Security, it doesn't matter. Government's job, it was created. We institute government to basically protect life. The two objects that we institute government here in America for is to protect life and personal property. That's it. Not to give you things, not to take from somebody. As a matter of fact, when we look at the concept of property tax, how is property tax, being able to take somebody's home from them, meeting the obligation of why we've instituted government in protecting property? It is antithetical to the whole intent of why we have created our governments. And you know what? We've never wised up, and we've never held them to task. This is why I think every state in the union has property tax. If you don't have property tax, give me a call and let me know. If you don't have levies, if you don't have any types of bonds and those types of things that they put on your home so that you can have so they can actually build a firehouse close to you to protect your property. Isn't that ironic? Oh, well, you want to have your property protected, we're going to put this taxation on it so that we can, if you don't pay, we can take it from you. And that's exactly what's going on with the CO2 pipeline. That's exactly what's going on with Agenda 3030, whatever the new name for the plan is. The globalist plan of taking your property. How dare you want to protect your property? It's all about the money to you, isn't it? And as a matter of fact, every time I have heard in my life, whether it's, and usually it happens when somebody, you know, dies with money, then, you know, these people, the siblings that start chanting, it's you only care about the money. And they say that because that's exactly what they're doing. I've seen this. I have seen how siblings work together and rob the rest of the family so that they get the money, and they challenge everybody to say, you only care about the money, to make you kind of step back and say, well, no, I don't, when actually the opposite is true. They're the ones that only care about the money. And when you watch what happens, that's usually what ends up happening, is how they've been served. Anyway, let me move forward here. When we start looking at politics and religion and how I believe this has created this thing called a confusion of passion, because most people, they have these deep feelings that compassion needs to be done and we've got to use government to do it. No. As a matter of fact, I truly believe that we've had some many, many bad lessons of confusion. One of the greatest lessons I learned was earning money and becoming self-sufficient, and how good I felt. Boy, I tell you what, it was hard. It was hard to be able to provide for my family. But I did it. And, you know, I made a lot of stupid mistakes. Boy, was I stupid. Because the education system basically hardwired me or convinced me that I should be doing these things or being rebellious, because that's the other thing that is innate within children, is just to be rebellious against the system. And so, you know, it took me a while in the Marine Corps to get my head right. But bottom line, the life lessons I learned at a very young age, well before I joined the Marine Corps, was the need to be able to provide for myself. I realized at certain points in time that certain people couldn't provide for me. I, you know, if I wanted something better, if I wanted a nice car, I wanted some specific clothes or something that I wanted, I had to earn it. I was never spoiled, contrary to popular belief. I actually worked hard for everything I had, and I've never tried to build. As a matter of fact, there have been points in time in my life where I could have easily just continually focused on ingratiating myself and becoming rich, but I never did that. As a matter of fact, when I was in management, I was promoting people and actually supporting people to get promoted above me. Because I believe that you actually, you know, promote those people that deserve it. And these people deserved it. There were times when I tried to promote people underneath me to position them to actually promote them up, because I thought, and some of them were women, and they did not want the promotion because their obligation to the family was more important than taking on more responsibility at work. And I understood that. It saddened me, but you can't tell me, you can't accuse me of being somebody that was self-serving, trying to create a dynasty. As a matter of fact, anybody that knows what, you know, how I worked, they would tell you that I actually was willing to realign resources that fell under me to somebody else because it made sense. It's not, if I never lived to be about me, and we have a big problem, because everybody is, it seems like, I can't say everybody, but there's way too many people today that are so selfish. But this goes back down to this confusion of passion. We have confused passion for others at the expense of others. In other words, to use government to take from those who have to give to those who have not. I have seen this in religious people, or people that claim to be Christian, but yet they actually believe in godlessness, because it is not of God to use force to take from somebody that, you know, maybe they don't have the resources or what. and give to somebody else. And then everybody gives their fair share, an equal share. You know what? If you have more and you can give more, give more. If you don't have much, give what you can and be blessed for that. But there are no blessings. And this is why America has been cursed. There's no doubt in my mind. We have parted from those ways that made us great. And the point is that I think we have false prophets, and they're far less in what we would really see as a religious figure, and probably more of them. There are still some false prophets in religion, but I think most of our false prophets are in the political sphere. And the point I'm trying to make is we've wandered so far that we've actually taken politics as a part and is central to your religious faith and your religious paradigm. Anyway, so let me get to what might have been. So as I see people and I've worked with and talked and mentored and counseled people who have gone out to run campaigns, instead of trying, and this is what infuriates me, instead of actually trying to create a petition campaign in growing a movement well in advance to your political aspirations and campaign. But instead, they decide, I really want to do this. And they've turned their back on trying to unite people on the Constitution. And what they do is they run a campaign serving themselves versus one that unifies all good and or all righteous candidates to join them in demanding support of the Constitution and pointing to all, this may seem like demagoguery when you point to all of these other politicians that aren't even questioning these unconstitutional vestiges of power, roles, responsibilities, and so forth. So, when you see these candidates, when you actually see these people, and they actually say, I don't care about uniting people on the Constitution. I'm going to run, and I'm going to try to, convince people that I'm the right guy for the job without having to basically tie my hands to supporting the Constitution, because this way I believe I'm slick enough that I can use political theatrics and compromises to basically make myself rich and still come across as a good guy because I'm doing good things. Not that I'm undoing unconstitutional government. I'm ensuring that we have a conservative control on it, like health care. We're going to limit health care. We're not going to be rewarding druggies. And we're going to have a conservative moral side of government health care. What? Folks, believe you me, these conversations happen. And believe you me, it is just, it's like a gut punch to me when I hear these people, but they don't want to even acknowledge or admit that they're there and they're playing that role. They are choosing political theatrics and compromising the constitutions so that they can succeed politically. This is the situation, because I've been hoping and trying to see if we could get a unified campaign anywhere in America, and I just can't get that to happen. We have a pledge on the candidate endorsements page. Go read that pledge for your state. Download that pledge. Change the name. Save it into a Word if you need to. And as a matter of fact, let me check real quick, because I could have swore that what I put up was the Word document, but I might be wrong, right? Or correct. So let me correct myself to see if that is a Word document or not. So when you go down to the Constitutional Candidates, it's right underneath the Red State Talk Radio podcast page. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's the 8th button down. You click on that. and it is a Word document. So all you have to do is double-click at the very top of the page where it'll let you go into the header to edit it. Put your state's name there. You know, if you're in Iowa, the state of Iowa. Or, you know, when I look at the page itself, it opens up and it has, you know, a pledge for your state or what have you. And so, well, I might as well open it up. And I'll just put it in temp. That way I can actually kind of look at it, because I do this on a different I do this on, you know, different computers. And so as I look at this and I pull this document in and it says your state, it says your state public servant pledge. So you put Iowa State public servant pledge, Ohio State public servant pledge. And then there's two other points in the document where you put your state, where it says your state in red. You put the state of Iowa. You don't put Iowa State. So, in other words, it should make sense, right? Constitution of the state of Iowa. If you put Iowa State, then it's so. Just, when it says your state, just put the state, your state's name right there. That's all. I have to do that because I know that people will just, you know, put the state name in your, and then they'll leave the state and go, huh, and not know what they, you know, because they're not reading it. So please take the time, read it. It should make sense to you. There's only 3 points that you need to edit, but read this pledge. This pledge basically holds them legally bound, that if you petition them and you prove that they violated their oath and they refuse to redress the grievances and do the right thing, then and you call them out on it, then they have to step down. And there's only one place that they can exonerate themselves, and because they commit to submitting themselves to a common law court of the vicinage of where they were elected, if it's the county or congressional district or what have you, the state of, but it'll be a common law court, not a, you know, under the civil polity, you know, bar association court, the corporate court of your state. It will be a common law court. And see, here's the problem. I don't think any state actually has any operating common law court anymore. We don't have them. We have to restore them. This is why it is important for people to really understand this. And so there's no way that these guys could actually exonerate, or any politician can exonerate themselves, because they don't have a court to go to. So one of the things that they actually need to do is they need to start actually yammering and demanding that we turn our backs on this corporate court system to restore our common law courts. Now, I'm not going to go into the details of what that takes. What I want to do is I just want to focus on what we need to do. What you need to learn is regarding the Constitution. When we finally get to a point where you've got enough action, where your county legislators are ready to start creating a common law court, because I'm going to tell you what, saving money at the county level is huge. Will you actually have to pay these judges? No. In other words, you could basically obsolete your judges, because when the Constitution, or I should say when the federal court created these territories and they created these judge positions, those judge positions were really for the federal court system. And so you still need to have a federal court, but you don't need a federal court in your county. And you only need to have a common law court, and you can actually downsize. As a matter of fact, who can represent themselves in the common law court? Any person can. Any person can basically, you know, go into a common law court without having to file. Now, the problem is that to create these common law courts, they're not free, but they're not money mills like the Bar Association's corporate court. Anyway, golf. The one other thing I was going to talk about is, because the U.S. Open and everything else is showing up, just remember that our golf system has been completely bought out by Saudi, you know, these globalist elites, Saudi Arabia or whomever has invested in it. It is unconstitutional for any foreign interest to own anything in America. That goes with these clubs, these teams, all of these companies, football teams, what have you. They cannot own those things. And it seems like America is for sale. Folks, they think that these deeds that they have over the PGA is legitimate. Whoever authorized, whoever said, yeah, you can have that and you can do that, went well beyond their bounds of authority. Whatever, because bottom line, it started at the top and it started at the federal level. And all of these people from the federal level down to your local that say, okay, we can do this and we're going to help you out, because they only cared about the commission. They only cared about, saving themselves or what have you. What should have happened, if the PGA was struggling in America, then the PGA should have went bankrupt. And some good American people could have stepped in and saved it. It's the same thing with when Chrysler would have went bankrupt. Had Chrysler and GM, I think Ford was the only one that didn't go into bankruptcy, but GM and Chrysler were the two. When Obama was taking office, what he did was he violated contract law by giving Chrysler to Fiat. He basically said, oh, you bondholders, you don't get anything. You get nothing. Where they've actually had, by contract law, they had protections where they would get the resources or the sellout of whatever that company sold for. At least the stockholders got nothing, but the bondholders are the ones that are protected. And Obama basically said, to heck with contract law. That right there was an impeachable offense. He did something he had no authority to do. And he started making those deals before he even became president, folks. So this kind of wraps up the things that we were going to talk about. And so where are we at right now? So we need to go back into the 14th Amendment. And what I was covering with the 14th Amendment was Kurt Lash's account. This little document that I wanted to dive into, the history of the 14th Amendment and its ratification. And so when we were just covering this, one of the things we kind of covered in the last paragraph was a concept and actually a comment regarding the comity clause. Now, before we go into I'll read it again, and I'll mention this on Friday, that the comity clause basically is referring to the privileges and immunities clause in Article 4, Section 2, in the very first part of this, which prevents a state from treating citizens of other states in a discriminatory manner. Now, this doesn't entitle a person if they happen to be in the state, if they're not a resident, to be able to vote. But you do have protections so that, you can, if a restaurant is open to the public and you're from another state, you have the privileges and immunities to be able to go and get service in that restaurant. And they can't deny you or discriminate against you. Doesn't matter what your race or anything else is, you just can't be discriminated. We'll dive a little bit more into the comity clause and get back into Kurt Lash's basic thesis for the privileges and immunities. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.